Ian, how did you feel this morning having woken up after the Washington Capitals lost some score to some other score? I don't know. I kind of blacked out against the Montreal Canadiens on Thursday.
I'll be honest. I kind of laid in bed and I did not want to get out of bed and I did not want to write about hockey today.
It's really getting to you, huh?
It's getting to me because I am a man of optimism and hope. Even when things are bad, you know what I mean? I'm always like, well, in time this might happen, or this player is looking good and that might happen. Right now I don't know what I'm watching. It sounds weird. It's like hockey's version of mashed potatoes. Like, it's just nothing's happening. Like, it's just,
wait. What about mashed potatoes?
I said it's the way they're playing is like hockey's version of mashed potatoes. It's just dead on the plate, not moving. I don't know.
What is moving on your plate? What are you eating?
I don't know.
Where was this mashed potato? I get that you were sort of going for like a poetic angle, but then you said mashed potatoes, and now, well, I'm just stuck on that image.
But tell me if I'm wrong though. Like this team is like, it's just systematic. It's everywhere. And then, like, as an analyst and as a writer, I don't know what to say.
Yeah,
because like I believe in the team. I believe in the coach. Like, I believe in the star players. I believe in everything. So like, I'm just kind of like, I want to be negative. It's hard. You know, I've seen some off and on really bad performances by certain players. Like, you know, like, I think, you know, John Carlson's been really good like most of the year. And I've always thought, I think he's kind of becoming a little bit more of an offensive player than a defensive player. And I think he gets a little bit too much criticism about his defense sometimes, but like lately he's been awful. Like last night when, that one, Brendan Gallagher was in the middle of the net and he was just like, kind of like reaching with his stick to clear it. And Gallagher just scored. I was just like, what is he doing? You know what I mean? But it's not just him. It's everybody. It's just, yes, it's everything.
That's the, you know? That's the part that's so weird. I mean, it's like every single, I could think of maybe like three players on the team that don't just profoundly depress me. And maybe, you know what, this is 2 minutes and 30 seconds. That's enough of a cold open. Let's get into it. The topic of the day is, oh God, let's panic. The Washington Capitals have been terrible since the All-Star break. Russian Machine Podcast. Let's do it.
And now it's time for the RMNB Podcast.
Oh God. So you, Ian, you said it perfectly, right? Like no one's been good, but maybe we start with that. Maybe we start with, if sure, anyone's been good, who has, and I'll just put this out there. Yeah. Lars Eller's been very good. He had to step up when Kuznetsov was out for a couple of games. He was producing, he was controlling play better than anyone else was. Like I was expecting like maybe like the fourth line continue doing well. No, they weren't. Braden Holtby, I thought, you know, like it always comes to this thing where like everyone sort of feels free to like house rule whatever goals should count and which ones were, you know, not his fault and that kind of thing. And I have a lot of patience for that. Because I generally think that like if Braden can stop it, he generally will, you know, like let's say 95% of the time. And what's been happening lately is that there've been so many one on nones or just like no one's clear in the crease. But I thought his efforts have been pretty solid. I don't know what his save percentage was against the Canadians, but he'd been putting up a bunch of like 93s, 95s and losing anyway, which is so terrible. And in every game, yeah, he's getting these odd man rushes. You know, he had like two odd man rushes in the first period, the first 10 minutes of the first period on Thursday night against the Canadians. Like that's a miserable performance for the skaters ahead of him.
I think that's part of the thing is that like, it's been so bad team wise. I'm not even looking at the stats. You know what I mean? I'm like, well, that's a good performance right there. Well, you know what really sucks is today I was just doing a pedestrian who's going to start this weekend post. And I looked at Holtby's numbers like deeply. I pretty much are looking at Samsonov's because he's had the, you know, really like record notable stats. So, you know, those team stats are worth sharing. I looked at Holtby's and he's under 90% save percentage and his GAA is over 3. And I'm like, oh my God, like The Capitals have literally stolen millions of dollars out of his pockets this year by how bad they played in front of him.
Like, yeah, well, there's different sides to this, though, because, like, the team wasn't this bad until, I don't know, January to, like, the middle of January. Like, Brayden was really screwing it up for himself earlier in the season. And now November, he's starting to put it together, they're totally sabotaging his ass. They're also sabotaging, like, Samsonov's, like, outside Calder argument. Like,
that's true.
He doesn't have any more, and it doesn't really matter. But, like, yeah, they're... And somebody's going to lose a job. Like, somebody's going to get, like, traded. That's sort of what I want to get into, right? So when we're talking, it's Friday afternoon. The trade deadline's Monday. There's no worse time, save the playoffs, for the Capitals to be playing this badly, for these individual players to be playing this badly. I mean, you've got, you know, playoff position, but you've also have, like, these players' livelihoods, their families. Somebody's ass is going to get traded, and it's not going to help the team necessarily. Like if you look at this, and we've been talking about this for, God, 2 weeks now, but, like, these aren't individual problems. Like, you can't get Kuznetsov's, like, on ice, off ice stats and be like, oh, there's the problem. That's not it. You can't look at it and say, oh, Michael Kempney's first stride is not as strong as it used to be. That's not it either. Like, there's stuff that's happening independent of pieces pieces that were doing great are no longer doing great up and down the lineup. So I've got no idea what it is. I know that just, like, swapping in Brendan Dillon, who I like generally, he's fine. I'm not so sure about him in, like, a top four role, but, like, he's a big dude. He's a solid player. He's fine. Like, that's not going to be, like, you know, a cure all. Like, you're also not going to get it, like, by, like, swapping Oshie and Wilson on the top line. Like, that's not what's going wrong here. And it's the kind of thing that's, like, the toughest thing for, like, you know, internet analysts to pore over and diagnose, because it's something that your video coaches have to do. This is tactics. This is strategy.
I have a broader idea of what's going on, and it's more, I hate sharing any narrative ideas, but, like, I think this might kind of be it a little, is that when they came back from the All-Star break, I think teams kind of reset then. Okay. Like that bye week when I remember as an athlete playing basketball, we had, like, we would be playing really well and you'd come back from Christmas break, like 4 or 5 days off, and it'd just be completely different. It'd be like starting all over again. And so I think when they came back from the All-Star break, and even though some of these things were kind of nosediving around Christmas, I think when they came back from the All-Star break, it was like they were kind of fresh and new. Then they're on top. You know, they're on top of the league, so there isn't that urgency. And then other teams have that urgency. We're like, OS, we are in 10th. We are in 9th. We, you know, the Penguins. Oh, man, we need to really step it up. You know, Crosby's out. We really need to play our best hockey here. So I think that's weird thing number one that's kind of happening that you can't really explain, is that there is a gap between excitement, urgency for games between the teams. I think when Ovi got to 698, there was another urgency thing that happened where other teams did not want to be the team that got scored on for number 700. And I've seen teams play PK different. I've noticed that guys are not leaving Ovi as much 5-on-5. He's getting a ton of attention. So I think that was one thing, is that Ovi was kind of saving him before. Alan May said this last night in his analysis that, you know, Ovi was kind of scoring them out of their problems before the All-Star break. I don't know if you would agree with that, Peter, but I think he kind of, you know, there were problems then, but then he would score 3 goals in the last 5 minutes against the Kings, and then the Caps win. You know, it's crazy.
Yeah, that was after, though. So that was February 4th, right? Like, okay. And that's, so, like, they've played, I guess, like 11 games since the All-Star break, and I think they've won 4 of them. So it's like, yeah, it's been a terrible run, and you're absolutely right. Like, the Kings game, and I think with the Flyers game after that, the Flyers game was probably the worst game they played all season. Those two games were terrible, and one of them, I mean, you and I were both covering that Kings game together. We were pretty miserable. And
it was like, horrible to watch.
What if an Ovi thing happened at the end? And it did, and it, like, totally rescued the entire night. I mean, like, It's like Dumb and Dumber, where he gives away the van for the Vespa, and he's like, just when I think you couldn't have got any stupider, go and do something like this and completely redeem yourself. That's what Ovi did with that hat trick, that natty hat against the Kings. But they've been trashed before that and after that.
Well, let me go to the other part of it.
I don't believe the part about I don't think the Caps are, like, holding the stick too tight. about like, or like pushing Ovi. It's not like that they're like getting, I mean, Ovi is getting shadowed definitely on the power play more. We don't see Ovi Island, which is one of my favorite things that you cover with the team. But
with the postcards,
it's just that they're not getting into that at all because they're just getting destroyed in breakouts at neutral.
That's the other part, is that the other thing is too, is that I think there's another two things going on here, is that the Caps aren't getting that crazy even strength scoring across all four lines that they were getting before. Remember, Jacob Verana was what in the top three of even strength scoring throughout the NHL in the first like 4 months. That's kind of, I think, naturally tapering off. Is Jacob Verana that good of an even strength scorer? It's arguable.
And then on top of that, I've noticed
the strategies of other teams have changed in the way they defend the Caps, and this was something that Brian McClellan spoke on earlier this week, said other teams are kind of sitting back and they're saying, okay, beat us 1-0. And the Caps don't know what to do with themselves. Like that's what I'm seeing, is that they're going through neutral and there's four or five guys back and they're like, oh God, they just chuck the puck. There's a lot of chucking of the pucks. And so they get lulled into sleep because this is a creative, fun, physical team. And when they're getting lulled to sleep like this, they're listless. And I think those are all the things. Yeah. It's like you have to dump and chase, or you have to somehow create speed off the breakout, even though there's four or five guys back. And they haven't been able to solve that. And I think they get lulled into sleep in these games where they have to fight really, really hard to win. Like if you look at that Montreal game, Montreal was just saying, all right, beat us 1-0. And the Caps didn't want to do it. I literally saw them in neutral just chucking it. They didn't want to do it. And so I think there's a little bit of an attitude change that needs to happen, which I think some of the players have talked about, which Brian McClellan has talked about. I think there's a lot of things that are kind of evening out, like regression that was natural. I think the Ovi thing is a thing, maybe not for the team, but for other teams. And I think the way that I think teams are really getting up for the Caps because they think they're the best team in the league. I think all that combines into a mess.
This is good because we disagree about like these underlying causes. Like for me, it's interesting, right? And listener, feel free to tell me I'm wrong. I don't care. But I mean, I do care. I don't mind. Yeah, that's what I mean to say. Like the attitude stuff is the byproduct of success or failure, not the thing that drives it in this case here, right? Like you can have teams that just hate each other, but if they win the cup, they're like, we're brothers forever. Like that's just the way, you know, the competition goes. What I think is happening is like really boring X's and O's stuff where like the team is trying these cheesy ass like stretch passes rather than having like a real solid fast skating carry in. Like they're just not trying to carry the puck in. And when they do, they get chances. But like we're seeing maybe like two rush chances a game now, just like this really depressing output because the team is getting lazy between the blue lines and maybe not being as, I guess that weakness in neutral is allowing teams to get a little bit more bold on forecheck before the breakout and after it. And that leads to like odd man rushes in both directions, odd man rushes towards the Caps net. And then it's like just stymieing failure to get any offense at all, which is why you had Ovi like bottoming out. Like we don't see Ovi like taking a bunch of shots or taking a bunch of attempts and getting burned on it. When he's had a lot of attempts, he's scoring goals like he did against like Montreal. What we're having is that he's not even getting to the offensive zone. And like the weirdest thing to me is that it's happening on every line except maybe Lars Eller's line. That's the part that just confuses the heck out of me. Like why are all of these lines doing something differently tactically that would lead to them all like failing? Like who made an adjustment? And if that adjustment is so obviously like failing, why are they still trying it?
I hate going to effort. I hate because you had a conversation with me early in the blog that like everyone tries 100%. And so I believe that. But like there's something going on with Lars Eller that is different than everybody else. And one of the things is that, like, you know, I think he's like a coach's son. And
Lars is?
Yeah, Lars, his dad is a coach in a Danish coach, I believe. I forget who he like the world junior team or something. But like it seems like when the Caps are really struggling, he really, really gets going, goes plays a faster game, plays a lot harder in the corners, like forechecks a lot harder. And he becomes like that ultimate leader, weirdly enough, like at least in this stretch. And he like, I think he like shows the guys how to get out of it. You have to get the, I'm going to say it. You got to get pucks deep. But seriously, like he has been leading on the forecheck. And there's like an extra like level for him during these really bad times. And it seems like he's been able to score. It seems like he's really been driving the third line, and that's kind of been it. It's just that they're work hard goals. You know what I mean? And yeah. I haven't seen much from anyone else, you know, I still think it's a strategy thing that is causing their issues in neutral, which the only way you can get out of it is working hard. And there's not many guys that are willing to work hard. Like they're just shooting perimeter shots. They're still kind of doing the same passes and stuff.
Yeah.
So,
and then like you have these like whole periods. This is the weirder part. Like you'll have like the second period against the Canadians, where there was just virtually no offense from the Caps. Like I thought the Caps did kind of okay in the first period against Montreal. They had some breakdowns that led to like quality for the Habs being better than you want it to be. But like, you know, on balance, everything was all right. And, you know, they could have come out of that with, you know, two goals if they, you know, got a little luckier. That second period wasn't the same though. I mean, the chances, I don't have it in front. Actually, yeah, I do. I have it in front of me. Let me pull it up. Like, all right, so first period, the Caps owned 62% of the shot attempts and 59% of the expected goals. That's a good period. Second and third periods each. So this is shot attempts in the second period, 35%. Shot attempts in the third period, 37%. Even when the Caps were in a hole, they were getting outshot roughly 2-1, you know, like 33%. Like, I know you know this, but like for like listeners, like 50%, like each team gets the same amount. Less than that means the other team's shooting more. Expected goals under 30% in the second period, 32% in the third period, which means even though they're getting like dominated, they weren't even getting like high danger chances. In the third period, when the Caps were trailing, they had one dangerous chance.
Shouldn't they be up around like 60% or something like that?
When you're trailing, I mean, I don't remember what they were trailing by at that point. And like, that's right. Like they forced OT. So they did have like a comeback. Right. But when you're up by like, when you're down by two, yeah, you should be getting like maybe 60%. Like that's what you'd expect of both shot attempts and expected goals. And it can be very, really volatile when you're talking about like a 20-minute sample, or in this case, like a, I don't know, like an 18-minute sample in the case of like power plays and stuff. But yeah, I mean, those are terrible games. Those are like, you know, it's the kind of thing where if it happened once a season, you'd say burn the tape, move on. But the fact is the Caps have had like five burn the tape games in a row. So like, let's talk. And let's talk about what the conversation, like people are getting into this on the internet. We can't just like dodge the conversation forever. Let's have it as, I don't know, as disciplined, as restrained as we can, because people are calling for Todd Reardon's head, at least on the internet. And fans are generally smart, but can be dumbasses a lot. Do you think that this is a coaching problem? Not necessarily a Todd Reardon problem yet. We can get to that in a moment. But do you think this is a problem with how the team is led by coaches?
I would say that it's fair to always hold the coaches accountable if there's an effort issue or there's something where the team can't get past certain things. And it seems like this team has just been kind of stuck in a hole. You know what I mean? So a coaching problem in general, I think, is fair. I don't know. Yeah. Like we can get to Todd, but, I've been the listless performances. That's sometimes when you have to make a coaching change of some sort.
I just don't think it like motivation or like laziness. Like I think those are fine descriptors of what the team's doing wrong right now, but they don't give you any information that you can like operate on. You can't make a decision based on that. Cause it's not like you can be like, hey, 22 guys, all of you do better. If that was a way to solve a problem, every coach in the league would do that every day, right? Like you can't just ring that bell over and over again and have it yield results, right? Like that the level of an elite athlete, there are players that will just be off some nights, right? Like that's just the human condition. But like these guys are the best of the best of the best, which is why they're in the top league. You can't just like inspire them. Bruce Boudreau was the least inspiring human being ever to speak to a group of athletes. He's you know, a bumbling buffoon, but he's good tactically. He knows when to push, he knows when to hold back. That's what Bruce is about. No one got inspired by Bruce. They just were given permission to like be creative and play hockey in a fun way. So like, I don't think that this is like a, hey guys, we need to double down here. Like Nikki Backstrom, you know, yelling at the team in an intermission isn't going to solve this problem. What is really boring video review and maybe showing Reid Cashman the door, dooming an assistant coach's St. Louis Blues 2019 firing late in the season. Hope that sparks a change. Like that's the kind of thing that the Caps see. Or just say, hey, Reid Cashman, Todd Reirden, you need to change the way this team moves their neutral, even though there's less than 2 months left in the regular season. Because if we do this, we being them, if we do this, we're going to barely squeak in the playoffs. We're going to have the, you know, the worst back quarter of the season that this team's had in since, I guess, what, they missed the playoffs in 2014. And we're going to get first rounded like a bunch of clowns. Like that's the trajectory of the team right now. If they were to play this in the playoffs against the Penguins, it would be an embarrassment. It'd be a sweep. Like they cannot just like not do anything. And they can't just add a depth player who will play 12 minutes a night and think that's going to solve the problem when the other 48 minutes are just as much of a disaster. Like this is not a personnel problem. This is a failure of coaching. And I'm not calling for anyone's head. I don't think I'm not. I don't think I'm doing that. I'm just saying that like doing the same is not an acceptable solution. And I think like that'll be evident when the Caps get their asses handed to them this weekend and next week by like the Penguins and whoever they're playing. Who are they playing this weekend?
They're playing the Devils and they're playing the Penguins.
Okay, they could beat the Devils even being terrible. They really can. They could beat Detroit and the Sabres. They're not much better than those teams right now. I think I was like, you know, the miserable stats I was pulling up this morning that, you know, they're bottom five in the league right now, at least during even strength. And well, you've seen how good the special teams have been. But yeah, they probably can't beat anybody except those teams right now. The Penguins have some defensive problems. They could get lucky against the Penguins, though. That, you know, whatever. I'm not here to talk along the margins here, though. The real problem is obvious.
I think one of the things that kind of frustrates me as a guy behind the scenes of RMNB is that like people a lot of times will have like narrative reasons for certain things, like you know, I searched the Todd Reirden thread on Twitter this morning.
You were name searching Todd Reirden?
I was looking for a quote, but and then I just came across a lot of the things that some people, even like respectable followers, were doing. And there's a lot of angst towards him. And I think a lot of people put the Barry Trotz situation on him. And they also look at what Barry Trotz did in his final year and look at what Todd Reirden did in his first year. And there's a lot of angst towards him for some reason. I think Barry Trotz, I think PR goes a long way with coaches, and with Todd, I don't think he's really connected with people. And I also don't think he's as articulate as Barry. Like I think he's pretty honest about things that he says, but like he's just not necessarily the most articulate person, and so I think people haven't really connected with him. And as the stretch has gone on, people just blame him. Mm-hmm. You know, like in talking to him, like I think he's a brilliant guy. And like I said in weeks before, is that I thought Todd Reirden does good lines. I like the strategy. I feel like the team is better and more even usually beyond this stretch than they were with Barry. I don't see him as the problem.
Let's put two pieces into this. The first one is that the Washington Capitals from the beginning of October through Thanksgiving were one of the hottest teams, not just in the NHL in 2019, but in the NHL over the last two decades. Right. They were for a very long time on a track to destroy Tampa's record. Regular season record from last year, right? Like that was an extremely hot team, but no one was going like, "Wow, Todd Reirden, he should get Jack Adams buzz," because that's just not, because it's so narrative driven, right? Like it's a function of media buzz and expectations, and a team 2 years removed from the Stanley Cup doesn't get that, even if you know their players are 2 years older than they were and they lost some important pieces. That said, I think the team's really good, but it's so easy to like not understand, even from like my limited collection of information, how the reporting structure works in like the National Hockey League of you know, front offices and coaches. Who reports to Todd? Who reports to Brian? Who reports to Dick Patrick? And like, and who reports to Ted ultimately? Those, that is a complicated chain. And there's people that are direct reports in one sense, but are direct hires by someone else. And it's, yeah, it's not necessarily like a very clear org chart that can make things really difficult. Like Todd Reirden ran the team's defense for a long time. Like we know that they can do better than this because he was running like that part of the team when they were better than they've ever been in 2017. So how do you explain that? I don't know. Maybe there's some insinuations that could be made, but yeah, I don't think that this is like outside of Todd Reirden's capabilities, but it may be outside of the things that you used the word accountability before, and like inside some of like the industry that I work in, there's sometimes like a distinction between accountability, which is the stuff you can get fired for, and responsibility, which is the stuff that you need to be in charge of. And they're not always the same thing necessarily, which is a silly difference in connotation. But yeah, Todd Reirden is accountable for a lot of stuff that he's not necessarily directly responsible for. And that's a bummer, right? I would give him as much rope as he needs to either save the team or hang himself. And I'm pretty sure I know which way of the two it will go.
Oh, is that optimistic or no?
Yeah, no, I'm optimistic. I'm the OG Todd Squad member. That said, I am I'm not furious. The opposite of furious. I am just so bored by the Washington Capitals. I'm so bored that I'm angry about it because like I invest a whole lot of time, just like you do, into watching this team, and it's so rewarding so much of the time. And it just hasn't been a shadow of that for the last 2 weeks.
Like, and it's hard to explain. So then it's not even fun blogging. You know right. what I mean? It's just bad everywhere.
We could do like, and this is another thing. Like if this were happening in a different sport where like they're interested in having a like healthy, diverse discussion, discourse about their sport, you would be able to use game footage in like a video, and I would just pull down video on demand of, you know, the Caps versus Montreal and the Caps versus like the previous three teams, especially the Flyers game and that Kings game when they were just disasters. And I would say, here's like isolated clips and say, here's what F1 is doing wrong and what D1 is doing wrong on these breakouts. And that is where, you know, you can have like the really, that could be interesting and compelling content for the internet, but that's just not where, you know, the NHL wants to be, really anyone outside of esports wants to be. Meat sports is way behind. Sorry, I'm calling it meat sports.
It's okay. Yeah, I don't know. That, you know, I also like, that's one of the things about, you know, if people are interested on how I feel a lot of times, is that a lot of the like broader, more general fans, their viewpoints can be really depressing. And it becomes like something that you want to argue against, but you're not sure the best way to. I don't understand the Todd Reirden narrative, and I think your accountability versus responsibility argument is very. I think that rings true here. Like you look at Blaine Forsythe, he was hired in what 2013 during the Oates administration, and he survived everyone. I mean, who does he report to? You know what I mean? Like that guy might feel like he's untouchable. And who knows what Blaine feels, because he's always dead on the outside of the inside.
Who knows if he's got it. No, there was one game. I don't remember which one it was. There was like a late game 6-on-5 and he runs a 6-on-5 in addition to the, you know, 5-on-4. And he was so there's no audio. I wish there were audio, but like NBC Sports or MSNBC Washington was like zooming in on him talking to the team. And I was like, hell yeah, Blaine, get at it. Like that was him at 11. The thing is like, and I wish that I could just get information, not even like good stuff, just like org chart stuff. Cause I'm wondering if Blaine's responsibilities, or I don't want to say responsibilities, but like his domain is excluded from the neutral zone stuff. I wonder if he's just power play formation, power play personnel.
Oh, interesting.
And like, and maybe he's just as screwed as everyone else about transition into it. I don't know. And that's the kind of thing that like no one would ever tell you or me.
Yeah. All I know too is that like the defensive coach is someone that was that is close to Todd. So that's even more confusing. Who's the defensive coach? I forget his name.
Reed Cashman.
Yeah, Reed Cashman. Him and Todd are very close friends. So you would not expect a defensive drop off. You know,
is Reed Cashman a Todd hire or a Brian McClellan hire?
I don't think anybody knows. I would assume Todd had heavy influence on getting him hired, but I believe wasn't Reed with the Bears. That's also an organizational hire. So it's hard to, there might be some dysfunction with the coaches, and it ends up being Todd's issue, but it's not even worth talking about because no one knows. You know,
No one knows.
And I don't want to throw anything at anyone's Menchies. Feet.
Our Menchies, everyone in our Menchies knows. They think they know. So like, where do you go from here? So, okay. And you are, for the next couple of minutes, Brian McClellan, and you're looking at the trade deadline 3 days from now. Are you going to do anything? Or let me actually put it like this. Whatever motivation you had to do something in addition to the Dylan trade, are you more motivated to do something now than you were a week ago? Or are you just going to stay the course?
You know what? I think I'm going to shock you with my answer. What I would
Nothing you could say would shock me.
What I would do is, obviously, I think you have to think of the team as how they were playing in the beginning of the year. And like in the middle, you know what I mean? Like when they were doing pretty well, I think that's who they really are. Yeah. And you kind of have to assume that what's happening right now is stupid and they'll get past it. Like you have to assume that. I wouldn't make any major trades. If anything, like I said, I'm a little concerned about Ponik, but you know, the third line's been pretty much been
the
best.
That was
the
least surprising thing you could have said. Softy. That's exactly what I would have expected. Okay, go ahead.
No, but what I think he should do, as soon as the trade deadline is over, I believe rosters can expand. Mm-hmm. I would bench like six people and bring up guys from Hershey. I'm serious. I would bring in guys that you know will play the right way. And these guys are playing their NHL debuts or you know, these guys have no chance of having any kind of like, you know, a lot of these guys are just like fighting and clawing to get to the NHL. So when they go in, they're going to listen. They're going to do exactly what you say and they're going to give you full effort. And I think what happens there is you create competition among all the players. And then if these younger guys show some of the older guys up, I mean, there's that too. Like I would actually rely heavily on Hershey to get out of this. I would call up a Liam O'Brien. I would bring back up a Martin Fejervaari. I would sit John Carlson. I would sit Nicklas Backstrom because I think he's been awful lately.
He hasn't been good.
And so I would do that. I'd just be like, all right, if you guys are going to play like this, because like I said, is that, I think guys try 100%, but sometimes there are atmospherics that, you know, affect people. And I think if you change things up like that, I think that would have a humongous impact on the team. Alex Alexiev in his NHL debut, you know, just do it and just change it up. Because they've been, they really haven't had any bench players all year. If you think about it, you know what I mean?
Because of salary cap.
And who cares about Travis Boyd? No offense to him, but like, I don't think guys fear Travis Boyd taking the lineup spot. But when that fear is reintroduced, I think you're going to see a whole different team, you know?
Yeah, you're advocating for what's called the Glengarry Glenn Ross approach, which is a David Mamet play. But in it, it's a bunch of like really desperate real estate salespeople. And in a scene that they did for the movie, Alec Baldwin comes in. He's like, I got bad news for you. You're all fired. The good news is you got one chance to keep your job. That's you want it to be that cutthroat for a little bit.
I would just say if you take Nicklas Backstrom out of the lineup, he's going to feel it. You know what I mean?
Let's talk about this about Nick Backstrom. Let's just play a little mind game. So it's February 21 as we're recording this. On January 14, Nick Backstrom signed a new contract. Imagine if Nick Backstrom played exactly the same and signed the exact same deal, but his name was Alex Semin. What would have happened if he signed a $46 million contract and then sucked for a month? Can you imagine how brutal the, like, God, it would be so bad and good at the same time.
Peter, I bet almost everyone listening is shocked that I pointed out Nicholas Backstrom as being horrible lately. Last night was one of the worst games I've ever seen him play. And I don't know what he was doing. And
I have the stats up.
They trot him out to the media trying to explain what's going on. And I'm like, dude, you're the guy. like you're one of the guys that is really sucking, you know?
So, now.
I mean, he's a great player, but.
Yeah, everyone's sucking. It's okay. Brendan Dillon, first game on ice for 3 goals against. That's pretty brutal. Rough way to get started.
Most of that was Carlson's fault, but.
A little bit, yeah. The Gudas-Kempney pairing. What did you think of that?
I thought Kempney looked great.
But Gudas was a little iffy.
They
were the ones getting destroyed on those odd man rushes in the first period.
I don't know why I'm not remembering that. Like really bad stuff usually stays with you, but like I just remember Kempney looking better than he ever has been. But that doesn't mean that he wasn't bad. You know what I mean?
They might have done better after that too. That was the first 10 minutes of the game.
Like covering the forecheck and stuff like that, he looked pretty good with Gudas, but God, so his numbers were awful?
Not overall. I mean, like, everyone's numbers were awful. They were about 50% in shot attempts and a little around average in expected goals. Like, the weird thing is, like, Dowd, Hathaway, and I think they had Boyden instead of Leipzig last night, or Thursday night, depending on when you're listening to this, but they were, like, 30% of shot attempts and, like, 20-25% in expected goals. Just absolute piss-tier performance. Really scary.
Explained 40% is the Mendoza line. You know, one game is not crazy, but that's still really bad.
If you played 25% for a month, no matter who you are, you get benched. Like, no, nobody's that bad. Like, the worst player in Buffalo doesn't get 25% like expected goals or even shot attempts over a full month.
Do you have stats up right now?
I do.
Could you look at Jay Beagle's numbers this year?
Yeah, that'll take me a second.
This will be a nice, fun, like, jump out of the negativity.
Well, you know, if you're doing video like I wanted to, Ian, the listeners could. Actually, well, the listeners, they're just on the podcast, so they can't
hear. Listeners, I didn't shower by 3:30 p.m. on a Friday.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I'm not depressed. So bad.
I'm not depressed.
I'm not talking about your appearance. Beagle is at 37% on the entire season. On shot attempts and 41% in expected goals.
I'm not trying to say that goals are a predictor of anything, but when I saw that he had only scored 2 goals this season, and I've seen some complaints about him on Twitter, you know, it's Jay Beagle. Everybody loves Jay Beagle. I just assumed it was horribad, and I was right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, Vancouver is such a weird position. Who was the other, like, depth player over 30? That they like signed last year. No, he's really good. He's really good. He's really good.
Oh yeah, I know. I know who it is. Like, I know broadly, but I don't remember the name.
That's not coming to me. And this thing gets all goofed up when you look at it. Funny. Oh well, I'll figure that out later. But yeah, they're one of them is just they're gonna have some weird situations, or maybe it was a defensive player. But yeah, he's Beagle's. Wow. I mean, I can't
He's won 60% of his faceoffs this year, though.
Oh, well, that counts for something. yeah. He's at 41.7% expected goals. And like, okay, let's take that to actual goals. This is adjusted for like game strength. But it's basically he's been on the ice for 8 Vancouver goals and 19 opponent goals.
Oh,
yeah, so that's brutal. That's pretty bad. Let's look at his saving and stuff. So
his career appears over is what you're telling me.
He's doing that with 93% goaltending. Really good goaltending, but there's just the offense is 4%. So they're shooting like less than half what you'd expect them to shoot. That's,
and I think overall he's shooting like 5% or something.
Yeah. Poor J. Beagle. Poor he's not going to, yeah. I don't think they're going to finish that contract up there, especially if like Vancouver thinks that they can compete, which they can't. I mean, they like Brock Besser is injured, right? Like, yeah. It may be over for them for the season. I guess we'll know what's going to happen because, like, by the time, you know, everyone's going to list this and then we're going to be at the trade deadline and we'll see if the Caps do something crazy. But yeah, we're kind of coming up at the end of it here. And like the Western Conference, I expect it to be kind of a dead deadline. That's a redundant way to put it, but an inactive deadline because so many teams are on the bubble, like especially in the West, that I don't know if anyone's going to be like, yep, we're definitely going to be sellers, aside from like a handful of teams like the Kings. And yeah. I suppose the Wild have really made that decision with firing and getting rid of Zucker.
Yeah, and a lot of teams have already made that big trade.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I mean, like I guess the Rangers are in position to do a lot of selling. Like, God, I mean, this could be the time. I've been saying this for like 3 or 4 years now, but this is the year maybe they'll move Lundqvist. I doubt it. Like, will we see like a big goalie move at the deadline? Like, I bet San Jose is kicking themselves for not doing that last year. Obviously, they're kicking themselves this year as well. Could Carolina go for an improvement there? There's just a lot of folks that could go for some kind of upgrades. I don't think this would happen, but like, I don't think anyone could take on Colorado could absolutely pick up a goalie, especially if Grubauer's hurt, like for any length of time. I don't know. I'm expecting it to be a beat boring deadline where everyone's just sort of twiddling their thumbs. But I'm so often wrong about these things. And maybe this is the year a bunch of goalies move. Probably.
Yeah, who knows?
It never happens.
By the way, you know what? I want to ask you a question. This is more of a in-the-house question about how we run RMNB. What did you think about me writing a story about the fact that Braden Holtby was staying?
It's anti-news, right? Like, this isn't a criticism. I mean, this is like a it's appropriate, right? It's something to be stated. And I bet somebody's gonna be like, that was even a question? Mm-hmm. Or like, what kind of idiot would even bring that up? I think those attitudes suck. I don't know. Our whole thing is we try not to presume too much about like the audience. So like we could write like super nerdy stat stuff, but we just write pretty nerdy stat stuff. And we could write we do write like stuff for like different kinds of audiences, but writing like high level news stuff, like that's important. That's an important thing that like, yeah, they're not even considering it. It's not going to happen. And it's the right decision for the team, and it's probably the right decision for us, you know, publication wise, to share a decision like that. Especially if McClellan gives it enough merit to respond to it, that's probably enough for us to. And I understand why people would have the question. I don't even think that question is that outlandish, because Holtby's on an expiring contract, so like it's not beyond the realm of possibility that the team would trade him. I think it's the right move not to trade him. And sometimes you got to let a player go for nothing, and that's okay.
Yeah, I think sometimes I write about things and I think people like get a weird vibe or like you said, is like they what got kind upset. Of reaction? Like why? Yeah, well, like you said, is that a lot of people, like I saw a lot of mentions and responses like, why would they even do that? Or of course they're not. And for the people that said, of course they're not, I think I agree in a sense that, you know, I think Brian McClellan answered the question overtly and kind of broadly a few months ago when he said, we're going to talk to him after the season about a contract. That means we're not going to trade him. One of the things about being in this position, like as a writer, we reach a large swath of Caps fans and, you know, not everybody is as locked in or paying attention as, you know, you, me, the people that are listening to this podcast. I would consider the people listening on the podcast to be hardcore Capitals fans. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you're a bunch of psychos. So,
yeah, and we love you. But, like, there's other people that, you know, like me watching the Orioles last year. You know, I'd watch one or two games, and I wasn't paying attention that much. And a lot of times those stories, A, are for people like that who might have seen someone yelling about Braden Holtby a month ago, thinking, oh, well, they might trade him or they might get rid of him, and being like, no, it's definitely not happening. The GM said it's not, and this is what's going on right now. So I think there's value with that, number one. Yeah. I always try to kind of balance that audience part where, you know, like – is this something that needs to be said? And I also think too that the fact that he's taking a question like that and answering it seriously, you know, that's something that's building the context of Braden Holtby's season and what's going to happen later on. You know what I mean? It also shows the consistency of the general manager and what he said. But I don't know. I just wanted to ask about that because I noticed a lot of people's feedback and I hadn't talked to you about it. I remember I asked you, is it kind of cool that I'm going to do this? Because a lot of times I bounce things off you because
I didn't respond. Did I?
No, you didn't, but that's okay. I think I made the right decision, but
you did. Here's the thing, so you and I don't go out to like bars, and we don't go to like we're too old for like keggers. But I used to go to bars, and I used to go to keggers, and those are the kind of conversations that some kinds of fans would ask me all the time, like, "Oh man, they got to get rid of that guy. Oh, are they going to trade this guy?" And I'm just thinking like, no, man, they're not going to do that. That's a bad idea. But
you have to say it.
Right. Yeah. And the fact that it's like that, like a person would ask it is enough to merit it. I remember like, God, it was, 8 years ago. God, was it 8 years ago? Everyone was talking about like the Penguins trading Malkin.
Oh, yeah. Which, that's right.
Like that was like a huge buzz for like a month and a half. Like, is that it for Malkin in Pittsburgh? And it turns out, no, it's not. And he won two more cups and they might win a third one this year. But that was, a certain tier conversation that is fine. There's a space for that. It just isn't a huge space. It's just
space. Well, actually, I think there is a huge space for it, but how much
it's just done briefly. Needle.
Yeah, exactly. So it's, it's been an interesting year. One thing that I noticed was that Braden Holtby's mom, who follows us, liked the story.
Oh, I love her.
And that actually made me feel better that I did it. You know what I mean?
I'm not ready to deal emotionally with what's going to happen. I don't want to even get to it yet. But, oh, God, I'm not ready to think about the end of Braden Holtby in Washington. I know it's coming. Shut up. I don't want to talk about it. We're not talking about it. But, oh, I don't want to talk about it. Oh,
well, one last thing about why I did the post. In another sport, let's say baseball, those kind of sports like baseball, it might make a lot more sense there. In hockey, a goalie's value, especially at the trade deadline, especially with that salary, you're getting like maybe a 6th round pick. You know what I mean? You're not going to get like superstar players. So I think that's another thing, is that a lot of broader fans, again, you don't think about the value of the goaltender. You don't think about. So I just thought that was a really interesting post that I did, even though it's not, to me and you, maybe it's kind of raking leaves. It's not really, advancing the conversation too much.
Let's close out with one more hypothetical question. I'm going to ask you this one. I asked this on the internet last night, but I've been thinking about it a lot. What if you found out that a Caps player was rude to like food service workers, people working in the food industry, waiters and waitresses and stuff? What would you think and do about that?
Okay, first off, what
do you know why
this?
I was thinking of it?
because everybody started guessing which player did it. And I was like, uh-oh.
Well, okay, so I just like saw a little clip, like during the broadcast. I didn't want to like call somebody out because you don't know exactly. There was no audio to it. It was just like, oh, I wouldn't conduct myself like that, speaking to a person who's helping me out. Like, that's not the way I would do that. But, who knows if I actually captured the moment, if I really interpreted the moment correctly. But man, Julie had the best response. She goes, "A rich white man? Rude to service workers?" you can't see it, but I'm clutching my pearls as I say that. No, there's nothing you'd do. You just go, oh, that sucks.
Yeah.
But instead of that, never mind. Throw that idea away. What do you think about Mike Green?
I don't know, man. I love it. I don't care about his stats. It would, like I said on Twitter.
Oh, he plays too? I thought he just smolders.
like what I said on Twitter was, if you're gonna bring back Mike Green, you gotta sign Alex Simmons out of Vityaz in the KHL. You gotta bring the whole gang back.
What
together.
Is Brian Pothier up to? what is Sean Morrison doing?
Peter, if they wanted a Stanley Cup with Mike Green and Alex Semin, I would just lose my S. I would be crying. I would, the first Stanley Cup was meaningful. The second,
that would be better. Maybe that'd be like winning it in 2010, baby. That would have been, there's an alternate timeline where the Capitals won back to back cups in 09 and 10. And bring all these guys back,
older and worse. Bring back Taylor Chorty, who I love too, for whatever reason. Just nice get guy. That cup, baby, with the old guys. Yeah, I love it. I love it. Do it. Do it.
Like, I'm glad we ended this weird conversation with an alternate history.
I want to reveal something on the podcast really quick.
Okay, here we go.
It's not a big deal. But so after the last 2 years, after the Capsule and the Stanley Cup, I got a warm up puck from Game 5 of the Stanley Cup Final as a present for Christmas. And after that happened, I was like, man, imagine if I got all the clinching warm up pucks from that whole playoff series from the Capitals. And so over the last 2 years, I've been trying to get them all. And over the last 2 weeks, I got the last two. So I now have everybody. I have the Stanley Cup clinching game. I found the Tampa Bay one through a friend of the site. I found the Pittsburgh one randomly on eBay. And I'm sorry for the person I got in a bidding war for. And then there is a photographer. Her name is Lily Schwartz, who is a Columbus Blue Jackets fan. And she got me the last one after I tweeted out and like 300 people retweeted me or whatever on my personal Twitter account to try and find me this puck. And I just got in the mail yesterday. I got the game 6 from the first round when they advanced to the second round. And she also threw in the other two games that they won in Columbus that year. And so Lily has inspired me. I want to get all 16 wins now.
Oh, so
all the pucks that playoff year from their wins. And so if anyone has any or wants to trade with me or whatever, hit me up. But I just wanted to take a moment to thank Lily, even though I know she's not listening. But I just wanted to thank her for doing that and selling them at a very, very, very reasonable price so that I could have that. And I know you're not a stuff guy, but
I'm not.
But for me, like, it's so cool. Like when I come down to the basement, I'm just like, oh man. You're collecting music gear. Yeah.
Not like most, it's just like plugins, like software and stuff, but I'm going to get a new guitar this year and like, you know, a pedal, but yeah, I don't have any, but you know, I'm looking around and I impulse bought a bunch of stuff thinking I was going to give it away. And I just haven't I got a charity raffle, Alexander Ovechkin holding the cup, like, plaque, which I like a lot. It's cute. And then I've got like some bobbleheads. I got, you know, Joel Ward and stuff. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, but it's just still in the box. I'm not doing anything with it.
Well, maybe we should figure out, you know, I have some stuff that's laying around too. Maybe we should find a way to get it to our people so that it can live forever with people who care about it.
To the people. Let's wrap this pod up. No, sure. I just mean let's get this podcast to the people.
One of my new stuff things is I went to the Lachlan Family Foundation night, and I got a sign that is the bidding sign of 69, signed by Craig Lachlan and Alan May.
There you go.
So that was funny.
That's the FRO.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Well, podcast listeners, you can FRO. We love you so much. Thank you for hanging out. The Capitals will get better. They really will. You can't say this bad for any length of time. They're gonna honestly, by the time we get to the trade deadline and a couple days later, it'll be don't worry about it. Don't even, there's nothing you can do about it. Maybe they'll be terrible forever. That could happen too. But yeah. Don't worry about it. It'll be all right. Worry about other stuff. Coronavirus. Worry about that.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. And hopefully after this weekend, we'll have a lot more fun things to talk about.
Such as
winning. And that strange feeling that we get after wins.
Where the goals on one side are more than the other. That'd be so great.
Yeah. Amazing. Amazing.
All right. Take it easy, friends.
Bye.
Bye.
This has been Russian Machine Never Breaks, the podcast. But now, it's over. Nothing to see here. Move along.